Welcome to another episode of GDPR Now, a podcast dedicated to GDPR and all things privacy. GDPR Now is brought to you by This Is DPO, and this week we are looking at cyber breach insurance, cyber insurance, what it is, how you should buy it, how you should notify under it if you have a claim. Your host this week is Mark Sherwood-Edwards, that's me, and in the studio I have Richard Sprague of London City Insurance Brokers, RFIB Group Limited. I think it's their formal name. They're known as RFIB. Richard, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a bit about what you do as a broker?
Yeah, I've been in the cyber insurance area for the last 17 or 18 years. It developed out of professional indemnity tech, technology errors and omissions, and it developed into its own product line. So I came to RFIB about 12 years ago, and we've started a practice within the last sort of five years, really running a dedicated cyber operation. We specialise in SME business, but that could be, depending on where you are in the world, it could be with revenues up to $250 million in certain territories like the US, but and obviously slightly smaller as we go around the world. So we've developed a product in conjunction with a number of insurers, which would cover, amongst other things, privacy and the like, but it also covers the business interruption, et cetera, et cetera. But I think privacy is what we're talking about.
Yeah,
today.
Primarily. Yes, that's right. And let me get this, understand it. So the function of the broker is to represent the client, the company who's looking for the insurance, vis-a-vis the person who actually can provide the insurance. And your job as a broker is to make sure that they are, well, to get the best price, but also to make sure the insurance that they purchased is appropriately configured, the right shape, the right issues.
Yes, typically that's exactly what we do. We sit there, we create a product tailored to the needs of the various clients, and then we would present that to various markets, i.e. insurers, to find the most appropriate insurer to offer the cover that we're asking for. Now what we're seeing is that obviously people are used to buying traditional insurances like the property, etc., etc. So we've just got to ensure that where some clients may think they have cover, because a traditional policy may say, for example, business interruption, that they are covered for non-physical business interruption, which is where cyber steps in to traditional policies. So what we do sometimes see is we're tailoring policies around traditional insurances that the audience today may have. So we're not necessarily selling a standalone cover, we're sending a cover that fits around another product. So we're trying to fill gaps. So we develop the product with the clients for various industry sectors, which could be lawyers, it could be accountants, it could be general service sector. So we look at industry sectors, we see what their requirements are, and we build up, and then we find market, we match it, and then we organise a claims process, which you may want to talk about later on.
Okay, and actually that raises an interesting point. So I guess people buy a company or typically buy insurance under different heads, types of insurance, and there's quite an important job with something like cyber insurance, which is quite a broad term, to make sure that all the bits of insurance actually marry up, and so you don't fall between two stools.
Yes.
Or something and suffer.
Yes, exactly. I mean, historically, for example, if you're buying professional indemnity, you may have said, well, whoever's providing a professional service, their duty of care is to keep my data private. Mm. A lawyer would be an example of that, but that wouldn't be limited to a lawyer. It could be an M&A activity, etc., etc. Now that is true that the PI policy, professional indemnity policy, they do owe a duty of care to keep the information private. However, there could be a cyber exclusion written into that policy. Mm. Therefore, we've got to ensure, see what the language looks like, and make sure that our policy fits in. And so knowing what their clients are already buying is as important as saying just buy a generic cyber policy. It's all about knowing what, knowing your client and knowing what they need and knowing what they've already got, okay, and working around that.
Okay, and in terms of taking international views, so we're both based in London.
Yeah.
To what extent is the business you're handling kind of UK, to what extent is it international, and to what extent is the terminology or the approach the same around the world? So I'm thinking about people listening to podcasts who are not necessarily from the UK, thinking, well, does this apply to me? Doesn't this apply to me?
Well, I think, well, I suppose inherently, RFIB themselves are a wholesale broker. So we do do some UK business, but that's a smaller percentage. Most of our business is outside the UK. Is the approach similar? The template for the insurance policies is very similar. However, how privacy is addressed is very different. So we've got some very significant structure around the EU legislation, GDPR, where other territories haven't and are catching up. So if you're looking at privacy in the Far East, they will have their own regulation in Singapore, they will have their own regulation in Hong Kong. I suspect the regulation will look very similar to the framework in the US and the UK, but and other territories may not have addressed it at all and are following on at a slower pace. So they're the thing, they're the areas we've got to take into consideration. However, privacy is an integral part of the cover. All that GDPR, for example, does, it's there are significant fines and penalties that go with that, but privacy is still an issue to a client, regardless of what the penalty may be. What I can say, and what we're all seeing, is that a framework around privacy will happen. It's here with us in the UK and Europe and the US, and the framework will follow in other territories where it's not as developed.
But in terms of the terminology, so the structures under which you will buy, you'll buy your insurance cover are going to be the same, more or less?
Methodology works the same way, okay. Yes. Yeah. Okay. The claims process, the methodology is the same. I should say that the policy is developing significantly. We're not at the end game of cyber yet. If you'd asked me what a cyber policy looked like 15 years ago, it looked very different to how it looks now and how we handled claims 15 years ago to how we handle claims now. So I think we're in a development stage. We're offering a significant policy which has proven response. We are having claims. It works, it's fit for purpose, but just as the cyber world develops, so cyber insurance will develop with it.
Okay, well, let's just talk about the start, kind of the kind of sharp end, and maybe work backwards. So, how does a cyber claim manifest itself, and how does it differ from a normal, well, a claim under an old school professional indemnity policy?
Yeah, so an old school policy, you would, you may have had a professional indemnity, a negligent event, so you will get a letter or an email or some correspondence from the client saying put your insurance on notice because you've been deficient in your professional service. That would then get processed into Lloyd's, and then nothing may happen for a significant amount of time. Cyber is very different in the fact that you may or may not have had an event. So you could have had a situation where you've got an outage and you can't access your computers, you then have a suspicion that may be some malicious code, some malware. What do you do? There's no point sending an email. You might not be able to send an email, but you want an instant response to that. Time is absolutely of the essence within cyber. So the process we have developed and the market has developed is that you would get a free phone number. Now, it doesn't actually matter where you are in the world because cyber is not geographically set in London, for example, if it's where your office is. The event could have happened in your office in Kuala Lumpur. Normally, you would get a free phone number that would be triaged, and it doesn't have to be in English. We can use multiple languages. If it happens in Japan, etc., we could get a Japanese responder. That triage will be usually a loss adjusting firm, heavily experienced in the cyber arena, Beneath that would be a panel of experts who would look at privacy, PR, and other specialist areas, and they would phone back. Sorry, if I backtrack slightly, the loss adjuster is the triage. They would then listen to what the event is. The event may be a privacy event. That may mean there is more than one responder required. Therefore, you could have a PR consultant ring back. It could be, it would be, a law firm to ring back in terms of the privacy, and they would ring back within 2 hours. Now, what we're seeing is on our SLA agreements that, that people are actually getting phone calls back within 20 minutes. So within 20 minutes of you saying, I think I've had an event, you will get a response from whichever profession or expert is required. And it, what I'll try to illustrate, it could be multiple experts.
Okay, so that you ring the phone number, someone does a bit like you go to accident emergency in hospital, someone does a triage, is it your foot, is it your arm, what kind of doctor need to see? And in the background will be a panel of law firms, a panel of PR specialists, a panel of IT forensic specialists, and so on.
Yeah, credit monitoring, etc.
Okay,
et
and depending, okay, and depending on the event or event as then perceived, the panel, the relevant bits of the panel, then get brought in, contact you, and get deployed.
Yeah.
So it's not like a home policy where my fridge is broken down and I get sent £500 to buy a new fridge.
No. No.
You don't get the money, you get the actual services instead.
You get the services that help you get back on up and running. I mean, the customers that we have, the clients that we have, the most important thing to them is that they are back up and running as soon as possible. If you are solely reliant and you're an online business, if you're offline for 24 hours, you could well be out of business. So the essence is we have to get you up and running very, very quickly. So the other thing worth pointing out is that on your home insurance, you will have an excess or deductible, which means you would pay the first £100, £200 or dollars of any claim. There is no deductible on the remediation element, on the assistance. So the client should not be put off by reporting what they think is an event. Because, is it an event? Is it not an event? Well, I've got my deductible to pay. There is nothing to worry about with that. It's literally ground up cover up to the limit that they purchase.
Okay, let's come back. We'll come back to the limits a bit later. And is that? Do you think that's better for a client rather than saying, well, don't, rather than going down the panel route, saying, well, we'll just cover. You go and buy your own PR support, your own legal support, your own IT forensic support, up to an amount. Is your view that the panel approach is better? Why would that be?
I do think the panel approach is better because I think from the client's perspective, they can get best in class, and they can get best in class exactly when they want it. Normally, the situation would be an event happens. If you haven't got a PR consultant, and he may already, if it's a systemic event, he may be dealing with another 100 customers. He may not have time to do it with you. Whereas the panel, that means this time slot, call it what you like, is fully reserved for your exclusive use. So you know you are going to get a response from a high caliber operative. Mm-hmm. You may, if you're doing it yourself, end up going down a phone book trying to find the right guy for the job. And that might not be the, it probably wouldn't be a prudent thing to do. Plus, you've got the advantage that the insurers we're using have handled numerous events. So they do know who is best at dealing with and rectifying problems, probably better than the client themselves may know. That said, the panel can be adjusted to possibly an industry sector. So if we're doing a cover for an affinity group, for example, they may say, well, actually, we have PR through XYZ company. Could we have them on the panel? Because we already have the relationship and they know us. Mm. That could be accommodated. That's part of the flexibility of coming to a Lloyd's broker and using London market, in the fact that we aren't necessarily as rigid as your home insurance, where you have to do what it says on it. We can bespoke that to a degree, so that can help them. The other thing on a panel approach is especially on privacy, we have a number of lawyers looking after the privacy aspect, or we try and have a number of lawyers, because you could always have the situation where they're conflicted, where the preferred lawyer of the client is actually conflicted because he's dealing with another event with another one of their clients, and it all gets rather messy. So we would then automatically put another law firm in the frame of equal quality. So that has its advantages as well.
Understood. And then in terms, so that's where the claims work. And then let's just talk a bit about the things that actually will pay out under the insurance cover. So let's just start with the thorniest one, which is fines. So if you get fined by the by your local regulator, the ICO in UK, CNIL in France, whoever, what's the approach? Is that covered by the insurance?
Fines and penalties, the insurance tries to cover, is the best way to phrase it. It tries to cover fines and penalties. So the phraseology is much like it is on a directors and officers policy. It's fines are covered where allowable in law. Okay. So in the UK, for example, we can't cover fines and penalties. We can cover all the remediation, but the actual fine is meant to be a fine. It's meant to be punitive. Yeah. It's meant to be... so we cannot cover that here.
So that varies territory
by
territory.
Absolutely. And it's not addressed in other territories. So it can be silent. But where insurers can cover it, they will cover it.
Okay. I've got a list. Okay, forensic costs. So the breach has happened. You need to send someone in to do the analysis to find out how did the hackers get in? Where is the malicious code, and clean it all out? Those kind of investigations, also maybe the cost of the ICO investigation, follow-on investigation, is that we picked up by the insurance?
Yeah, the IT forensics is fully picked up. So. Okay. Finding data, where it's gone, that getting you back on track is fully coverable.
Okay. It's all right. Communications with the data subject, that's a big issue, isn't it? So yeah, so you're a company, someone's hacked in, they've taken the details, bank and account details of 100,000 people, say.
Yeah.
Then it's an obligation to contact those 100,000.
Absolutely. Well, it depends where you are in the world, and certainly somewhere like America, it depends which state you're in, but there is an obligation to notify. Now that could be you're notifying generally through a newspaper vehicle or a media outlet, or you have to individually notify, or you have to actually write to everyone. All those breach notifications are coverable costs. And then you would look at, if you'd had a breach like that, costs such as credit monitoring, credit rectification for the individuals. The well-known case sat out there is the Marriott case, where people's credit card details and various personal details are out in the public domain. There would have been notification via various outlets, and that is a coverable.
If I remember looking at the Marriott webpage after the breach, you could actually access some kind of ID theft protection kind of software or monitor
And how that works is the companies will be monitoring the dark web to see if your name is coming up and your email addresses are coming up, etc., etc. Companies are on the panel to do exactly that, and they will notify you. They would then start trying to correct your credit records, and if you have suffered a financial loss off the back of that, that is coverable as well.
Okay, that's interesting. Because from recollection, that was one of the big, when TalkTalk, a UK mobile phone provider, had a breach about 5 years ago now.
Yeah.
That was, and they paid a huge amount. Well, it cost them a huge amount.
Yes.
And if I remember, that was a large part of the cost, was the comms, buying people some personal protection insurance. And presumably the panel approach here means that you're not paying, if it normally was £100 per person, or €100, $100 per person per year, if you bought it in normal circumstances, presumably the insurers negotiated special prices, so they effectively it's all built in.
Yes, with all the suppliers to the panel, the insurers have negotiated with who, in their view and our view, is the best responder, but they have the economies of scale to get significant savings on what you and I would have to pay for.
Okay, understood. So the insurance will cover your legal expenses, no doubt, vis-a-vis data subjects affected, and vis-a-vis the ICO, presumably, if you get into how to face off to them. What about things like lost management time? Is that picked up? So that would suck up quite a bit of management time.
Well, you've got the increased cost of working, which is the business interruption element. Okay. of the coverage.
And that's a separate head, is it? Increased cost of working.
Well, it would be phrased under the business interruption element.
Okay.
And as opposed to the business interruption that most of our listeners will be used to, which is, you know, a physical fire flood event.
Yeah.
Obviously, ours is a non-physical event, which causes them to have an outage. So yes, that's the broad heading on that. We can go into more detail on that with clients, because business interruption in itself has its own calculations on how you do that, and each industry sector has a different business interruption looks different depending on what industry sector you're in. If you're in the petrochems, it's going to look different to if you're an accountancy firm.
So
that's why we like to talk to the clients.
Okay,
and each industry sector is approached slightly differently, shall I say.
No, understood. And what about reputational damage, stroke, loss of income? So, you know, if you were TalkTalk, a good example, their business dropped off noticeably after the breach.
Yeah. If you're saying, are we going to cover a share price dip? No, we're not covering a share price dip. That, you know, it's a consequential loss. What we are covering is the PR that would have helped TalkTalk with that event. Now, I'm sure TalkTalk, and I can't speak for them, but I'm guessing they would have had the PR consultants working on it, but clearly they didn't have PR consultants working on it immediately. And that's just unfortunate for them, because they were one of the first to get a breach. That was just the nature of the beast, and I think a lot of people learned from that how to handle an event. But that's the beauty of the panel. You will get that instant PR response. There are benefits of having the policy, because you know you've got this, you're tapping straight into PR. Now, you may not have thought of PR as part of the response. You may be more interested that you've got a denial of service, a ransomware attack, because you want to get back online. But the consequence of that is that if you can't get back online, there is a PR element. Some clients don't necessarily think they need all the elements. They think they need one element, because the immediate problem is fix it.
Yeah.
But actually, the longer term problem, as you quite rightly said, could be the PR.
Yeah, public relations, comms, all that area.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, but you don't have this. I understand you're not going to cover the share price, but you don't say, well, pre-breach our monthly revenue was 10 million euros, post-breach it's 5 million euros.
Yes, so if you're saying, are we covering the share price fluctuation? No, we're not. If you're saying we're covering a loss of revenue, that would be classed as a business interruption. We'd have to look at what that looked like.
Okay.
But that would be a business interruption, because if you can prove that the loss was,
we were
XYZ prior to loss, the breach happened, and the subsequent result was we're down 70% on our earnings, and it's clearly evident that the proximate cause of that was this event. That's absolutely what we're what we're here for.
And what about directors and such like? Do they get, to the extent directors may be exposed to some statutory directors and exposed to some kind of liability? Does that get picked up under the cyber insurance, or is that under the specific insurance for directors and officers?
Directors and officers themselves, the directors and officers insurance is their obligations and their responsibilities, as you know, in the management of the company. So that's part of that would be ensuring that you've got the right cyber security, etc., etc. So that's really where it should sit. That, you know, a director or officer as an employee, as anyone, would benefit as anyone else would from cyber. In their capacity as a director, that would sit firmly in the directors and officers bucket.
Okay. And so directors and officers, would that include the chief privacy officer or the DPO in a business typically, or is that taken for granted, or would that need to be explicit?
Directors and officers, it's funny because officers aren't defined, so there is a broad definition of having significant, I'm trying to think of the words, but
not very from territory, yeah. A bit like.
So I wouldn't necessarily, if they are providing a significant role, I would say those guys should be the D&O policy should look to cover the privacy officers, etc. But it depends on each company, and are they actually involved in the running of the company, or have they just got a function within it, if you get my meaning?
No, understood. Okay, that's interesting. And in what circumstances would a insurer not pay out on a breach? So I'm thinking about the big Equifax breach, which there was an Equifax breach in the UK, no, it was all in the US, affected UK data. But the Equifax breach in the US about 3 years ago, which cost them $314 million at one point in time to remedy and update everything. That was a result of they hadn't updated their software.
Or poor hygiene, really, wasn't it? Look, the policy is actually, it's there to cover any covered loss. I mean, that's what all insurance is. But as long as the clients at the time of buying the insurance, have adequately filled out the proposal form in an honest and open way, and when they say, for example, we are patching once a week, as long as they are patching once a week, then there is no issues. Now, if they miss it by a few days or whatever, that's I can't talk for insurers, but I would be surprised if an insurer wouldn't respond to that, because it's. That's what the insurance is there for. I mean, that's, lack of patching is one way of getting into a system. If the client has never patched and only patches ad hoc, then there could be a situation where insurers would turn around and say, well, you said you were patching once a week, you've only done it in the last 6 months. The information you've given me allowed me to set a rate, and I would have set a rate or not insured you had I known this information. So, all I would say, really, as with any insurance, you've just got to ensure that, to the best of your ability, you answer the questions correctly and disclose correctly what you do as an operation.
Okay, now understood. That makes sense. And how do you think cyber is going to evolve over the coming years? I mean, a couple of data points. I know that there's a report from the Poneman Institute from 2018. And they said they reckon that just over 25% of companies will have a data breach in the next 24 months, right? 25%, that's a quarter of companies, that's quite a large number. And also, I can't remember the data of the rest of the world. They said that the average breach in the UK took 163 days to detect, okay? Just more or less half a year before, from the breach occurring to spotting. That's on one hand. So. That's things as they presently are. No doubt technology are getting better, people are getting better. On the other hand, we've got the new GDPR fines, which haven't really kicked in properly yet, much bigger numbers than before. Mm-hmm. We also have class actions starting, at least in the UK and probably the rest of the world. Sure. So the BA had a breach the other day, a year or two ago, 380,000 people affected.
The loyalty cards, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I know that one of the law firms handling the breach is claiming £1,000 per person. That's mm-hmm. 380 million.
Yeah, it's a big number.
It's a big number.
Yeah.
So how is this going to develop? I mean, will insurers be much more rigorous with people?
I mean, in short, yes, they will as the product develops. The loss ratios at the moment for insurers are low. As it's a developing product, I could see certain areas where where things are tightened up, particularly around cybersecurity. But I can also see benefits occurring. So, for example, we, with one of our carriers, if there is a situation where they don't maybe have commercial grade antivirus, they don't have firewalls, and they don't have cloud storage, the insurers are now looking at giving that to some very small entities for free. So it helps them answer all those questions on the proposal form where they said no or they weren't sure. They can get ancillary product for free, negotiated by the markets, which allow them to say yes and have the comfort of knowing that they are abiding by all the terms and conditions of the policy. So I can see the policy offering some enhancements which aren't traditionally in the insurance arena. But buying the insurance means you can get these additional products, which gives you much better cyber hygiene, call it what you like.
Yeah.
Okay. Other areas I can see where product will be or is being developed is around the data breaches, really, is how a data breach occurs. So you've got this significant number mentioned, but data breaches is not just some chap sat in his bedroom and he's trying to hack into you. That's quite a difficult way to get into your system. Social engineering is the way a lot of people are getting breached, whereby over a period of time someone may be ringing you up and somehow will get your name, the name of your pet, which may be your password, etc., etc. Get the enough information to be able to get into your system through a socially engineered environment. Now, traditionally in insurance, that would have been covered more under your banker's or crime cover. But actually, they're getting that information and then they're using it for a cyber attack.
Mm.
So social engineering we're seeing is more of a development, and you could have argued a few years ago, or a year or so ago, that was not a coverable event under cyber, and now we're seeing that it is becoming a covered event under cyber if you're getting in via a socially engineered way.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay, I've got two kind of follow-up questions from what you just said. Is cloud now perceived as higher risk? There's a time when cloud started, you know, people, particularly in financial services, muttered about the risks. Is it now, is cloud seeing higher risk, lower risk, ordinary risk?
It's seen as less risky than other storage spots, but, you know, because it's being run by a professional operative who has commercial grade state-of-the-art virus to protect the clouds, the cloud itself, cloud is another machine that's storing.
Yeah.
However, they have vulnerabilities like anything else. So, but I personally, I'd still think the cloud is the place to go because they are, you know, part of what they offer is security surrounding that, and they're much more able than the individual. And I'm not sure that everyone who stores things on a USB, for example, is using an encrypted USB. So you could argue. So I would say at the moment, cloud is the place to go, but always being aware that, you know, the cloud is there to be, or the machine or the storage vehicle is there to be hacked as well.
Do the insurers talk about the social engineering? Is there? Do the insurance community, well, the cyber insurance community, provide a, this is the ongoing, you know, these are risks that we noticed last week. Is there a kind of, if someone wanted to get up to date of what the latest risks were, or the latest attacks,
there's various, the insurance industry per se doesn't, as a whole, doesn't put out, as far as I'm aware, doesn't put out, alerts as such, but there are various websites that do give you, which are free, give you data breach information on a weekly basis, and it's just something that if you Google it, I think the one is actually called databreach.com, and it will just give you, I'll have to check that, but and I get regular updates coming into my inbox, so that is fairly easy for the guys out there to do. Okay. if there is and obviously the broker's role, if there has been a quite a major event, and the way that the event has occurred, and it's very, very new, and we as brokers hear about it, obviously we do advise our clients that, you know, this has happened, and actually this is quite an innovative way they got into the system. Mm-hmm. Are you aware of this? And you know, that's part of what we do. The beauty of going to something like these websites is they're collecting this data on a worldwide basis, whereas we'll only ever have a snapshot of what we're insuring. Yeah. You know.
No, understood. Okay, and we're coming kind of up to the end of our time slot, but if you were, would you have any words of advice for someone's a DPO in a business or head privacy officer, or, you know, heavily involved in the data protection privacy in a particular business or organization? Would you have any particular kind of recommendations or word advice as to what they should do in relation to insurance in particular?
I mean, I can't tell anyone they've got to go and buy the insurance. I think the first thing to do is just to explore it and actually find, I think they'd be pleasantly surprised that the breadth of cover that they can get from insurance. Maybe if they looked at the insurance 2 years ago, they'll see quite a big difference from 2 years ago to today of what we're trying to cover and how we're trying to address it. We're trying to move the insurance at the same pace that the bad guys are trying to get into the system. So it is developing quite quickly. So, of course, I'd say insurance is a great way to do it, but I would think if you look at the downsides of not having insurance and the cost of rebuilding a database or notifying all your clients versus the premiums at the moment because of the low loss ratios, I would have thought the economies would say cyber is a good alternative. Plus you've got, most importantly, you've got best in class looking after you in the event an incident occurs, which you may or may not be able to afford normally in your normal course of business. So I guess I'm saying, you know, explore it, see what it looks like. If it's right for your business, it's right for your business. But I think once most clients see the breadth of cover and what we can give and how we can tailor it to their conventional insurance, they normally come down on the side of buying the cover.
Understood. Okay, that's really very helpful and very informative. So thank you very much, Richard.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Is it all right if I put your contact details up on the show notes so people get in touch?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, I'll do that. So Richard Spray's contact details will be up in the show notes if you want to follow up with him, if you have any questions. I'll put a link to that report I mentioned and other bits of information as they occur to me. That brings us to the end of another episode of GDPR Now. If you have any questions or things you want to talk about, please drop me an email at info@dpo.co.uk. That will be on the show notes as well. Forthcoming episodes are going to cover a review of cookie monitoring software. We'll have a session on privacy security at some point, and other breaking news stories. Thanks for listening, and speak to you next time. Thank you.